rock and roll. Welcome to Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico. I'm your host, Steve Ricardo. We're coming to you live from WMFO in Medford, Massachusetts, with our friend and colleague, Mike Newman, on the little soundboard. How you doing, Mike?
Hey, Steve. Easy for you to say.
We have two incredible guests for you today, two repeat offenders. You know, I'm going to call them co-hosts because that sounds better. Two guys that have paid their rock and roll dues for many, many years. And when I say veterans, I mean veterans. First, we have our friend who started helping bands move and set up their equipment in the Boston scene in the early 80s, working with many, many Boston bands, and has gone on and to tour with, check this list out, I don't think I have them all, but we'll try, The Cure, Depeche Mode, Shakira, Janet Jackson, Coldplay, and most recently was the stage manager of the Alanis Morissette, Joan Jett, tour. That's a pretty decent resume. Wait, I forgot one more thing. He's also an avid music collector where I frequently like to go record shopping with. Ladies and gentlemen, Tom Wilson.
Oi.
Greetings.
Good morning.
And we also have another veteran of the scene. This guy has played drums and has been a huge personality in a lot of bands over the years, and there's no way I'm going to remember them all, but I'm going to just say Fingerpaint, Shake the Faith, The Marvels, Vaughn Kenmore's, Cage Teat, Wild Zero, currently Diablo Gato, one of the finest bands around. He has a new band he's going to tell us about. Our friend and music critic, we don't want to forget that part, Jesse Mayer.
All around life critic, self critic.
It's good to have you both here.
Good to be here.
This is a good way to lead up to our conversation that we're going to have about the changing face of punk rock. Can we talk about the hoopla surrounding Dickie Barrett for a minute? I want to hear what you guys think about whether it's a good or a bad thing for musicians to come out and talk politics, or in this case, wear the candidate's name on the back of their shirt in front of what is an apparently very left-leaning audience. But before I do that, I don't want to disregard the accomplishments that Dickie made, and there's something here that I want to share with you that's really good. I picked one band that played on each one of the hometown throwdowns from 1994 to 2019. Now, I picked specific bands out for a reason. I'm just going to hit you with this. 94, Hmong. 95, Amazing Royal Crowns. 96, The Outlets. 97, Big D and the Table Kids. 98, The Shods. 99, Sam Black Church. 2000, Dropkick Murphys. 2001, Lost City Angels. 2, Street Dogs. They took 5 years off. 07, Dark Buster. 08, Slapshot. 09, Bimscalabim. 10, FUs and DYS. 11, Ducky Boys. 12, Dogmatics. 13, Continental. That's Rick Barton's band. 14, Big D and Lost City Angels. And 15, I was living in Pittsburgh. I can't believe I didn't know this happened. The Neighborhoods, The Real Kids, and The Outlets all played. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is I do not want to disregard the accomplishments of Dickie Barrett and all he's done for the Boston music scene. And I'm not going to keep going because there's a lot more, but I want to know, does this anti-vaxxer thing diminish everything that he's done with his career? You want to start, Jesse? Or?
Oh, man. I'll start by saying this. I don't agree with Dickie. I have mad respect for him. I don't agree with RFK Jr. But him wearing that on the back of his suit jacket was by far the punkest thing that happened there that weekend. How did we get to this point of the pearl clutching and gatekeeping in punk rock? I thought what this was supposed to be was a coming together of ideas and opinions and different life experiences. And when it started, like John Lydon, when he was Johnny Rotten, said this was going to turn into a uniform and a fascist movement in 1978. And here we are.
He did say that.
He was right. You know, and we were talking about this earlier, where punk has drawn on everybody from the working class. You know, Sham 69 are working class. The Talking Heads were intelligentsia. They came from Rhode Island School RISD. From RISD. Lou Miami came from somewhere else. Rick Berlin came from musical theater. The Ramones came from Queens. You know, everybody's opinion was welcome. It doesn't seem that way anymore. And I don't know whether that's as much about punk rock as it does us as a very divided society. And I think it's probably the latter, not the former. Tom, what do you got?
Well, I'm hanging on the phrase that you just used. Is it not everyone's opinions count anymore? Is that kind of how you said it?
Well, not everybody's opinions are welcome.
Are welcome. I feel I agree. I'm thinking back to before the internet, when our opinions only got so far. If you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Bouncing out into the world. Now, oh my God, you sneeze on the street, somebody in Central Asia knows about it. So it's just so, everything's so connected now. So I think about Dickie. I think about Dickie's views on politics, whatever they are. To be quite honest, doesn't really concern me. I find the whole thing confusing nowadays, trying to follow this politics stuff. As far as showing up with something written on your clothing, well, when I worked in a corporate warehouse, I couldn't wear clothes that said things on them. And I kind of thought that was wrong because all my life I've been a roadie guy. I wear pretty much whatever I want. So I respect that. I feel like I can wear what I want, where I want. No matter who I'm going to maybe upset or not. And I don't know if Dickie did that to rile people up or not. Well,
you guys are both being really nice because Curtis Casella from Tang sent me a video of Dickie walking on the stage. That's where I just did a screenshot and I put the photo on my Facebook page.
And people lost their minds.
Wow. It was insane. And most people like ripped Dickie apart like you would not believe. And then it's funny because then I see the pictures of him and Chris Doherty, him and Rick Barton, him and Al Barr, and they're all hanging out. Everyone's all buddy backstage. And I'm thinking, well, those guys don't agree with Kennedy 2024. You know, and it made, and I felt bad because some people actually thought that I was either A, attacking him, or B, I was pro-Kennedy, which is really funny because some people actually blocked me. I talked about this on the show before. Jeff Connolly blocked me from the Liars. I don't mind saying it live on the airwaves. But is it okay, though, Jesse, that he actually wore that out on stage at the Punk and Drub? What is it called? Punk and Drub?
I think it's okay. I think it would have been better instead of calling their band the Defiant, if they'd called themselves the Unvaxxed Kennedys.
Not quite dead yet, but it's okay.
I'll go further, and I'm going to get killed for this. I saw a post recently. Do you know what TERF feminism is?
TERF feminism? Yeah. I do not.
Trans-exclusionary radical feminist. It is feminist women who are not entirely okay with trans women. In that
they're out there.
That I know one personally who happens to be married to a trans woman because they feel that their upbringing as girls in a patriarchy, they're having a menstrual cycle, is not something a trans woman experiences, and that it's different. This is
you're opening up a whole can of worms here, Mr. Mayor.
I don't care. This is the J.K. Rowling thing. I've seen some posts about this. I saw somebody post, you know, punk rock is about expressing your views. It's not about having purple hair. And
that's how it started.
Yeah. Now, you may find that TERF feminism is vile. You might find that you agree with it. But the fact that you can't have a voice, that if you express a view that's that much on the edge, that's farther out on the edge than Dickie wearing a Kennedy 2024.
I would agree with that.
That discussion can't be had. I think we are better off as a society if we have these discussions instead of the no, I can't hear you, you're effing fascist. That's not an exchange of ideas. That's not how we learn from each other. And I don't think we have to agree. And I, you know something? I thought it was both ballsy and hilarious that Dickie did that. And I do think it was the punk.
That's kind of why I posted it and put a question mark in it. Because I was
he must have known that there was going to be a reaction. And he may have done it simply for, let's rile some people up.
Yeah.
People do it all the time. But now things are different with politics. I've never, growing up, I've never seen anything like this. The elections were never close.
And we had
like
Ronald Reagan.
But to me, you see, I'm a Democrat lifelong. I'm a left winger. What can I tell you? And do I consider all right wingers to be knuckle draggers? Well, not all of them. Certainly some of them. But to vote for a knuckle dragger and be punk rock at the same time, is that a possibility? Is that kind of a
question? That's a question for Jesse.
Let's talk about, punk rock is just not just an American phenomenon.
No.
But if we go back and you go to the British working class punk bands, well before Coxbar, let's go to Sham 69. And the association with the National Front.
Working class too, right?
Yeah, you had, those guys were all project kids. So were the Pistols, who were something else. But, God, and there's always been an element of fascism in rock and roll. David Bowie embraced it around the Station to Station, Cocaine LA period.
What do you think it was like with the Boston Crew was around in the early 80s? I mean, were they political at all? Because I don't remember ever hearing one. Were you around them more than anyone?
I was around them a little bit. I don't remember a lot of politics, like national issues being talked about. Really, it was about making a lot of noise and raising hell back then. It was my thing. But no, I never picked up a right or left thing from those guys at all, now that you mention it. It's an interesting
thing. Are you talking about the Youth Crew stuff and Ray Capo?
The Boston Crew particularly. So SSD,
DYS.
Tony Perez, my brother-in-law.
Choke,
Al, and Jake. I never considered them to be like fascist right wingers.
On the other hand, they weren't
flower sniffing
hippies.
They had
the skinhead look. They looked like skinheads, and back then thought skinheads were like
Nazis. They looked menacing.
Yeah. Well, also didn't Florida State University come out of that? If you know what I'm saying?
I think it was a little later. Yeah. It definitely came out of the Boston hardcore scene. You're talking about. Well, I don't really like to talk about them. Yeah. Nobody wants to talk about them for obvious reasons.
I mean, do you guys remember the Boston Beatdown videos?
I do. I didn't. I was not in favor of them.
I did not see that.
Didn't like it. I didn't like it at all. And I don't want anyone to come after me for saying this, but I don't believe in that gang violence at all.
Neither do I.
Any kind of gang violence. And it's just not good.
I was managing editor at Soundcheck magazine when that came out, and Crosscheck Records wanted to do a full page ad for that, and I wouldn't take their money. I mean, it's just like, if you guys, I can't.
Okay, let me just take a step back here, because I want to really get to the bottom of this. Dickie got kicked out of the the Mighty Mighty Bosstones, and he lost his TV show because he refused to get vaccinated. Doesn't that put a really bad check next to his name in the society we're in right now? Are we supposed to just say it's okay that he did that?
Well, it has a bad check for his name for those that chose to get vaccinations. What about Dickie's fellow anti-vaxxers that are in his in the TV industry in LA? What did they think about it? There's got to be people who have differing opinions, I would think. But it seems like the majority of them wanted Dickie gone. They wanted him out.
Like you, I'm a lifelong, Democrat, liberal Democrat.
Right.
So, I mean, I never liked getting flu shots, never got him in my life. But I saw what was going on, and it was a really dangerous time. It didn't seem to make any sense at all to be an anti-vaxxer to me, but that's just my opinion.
When it comes to life or death, I usually take the smarter option, so that's what I did. I don't know.
Hey, man, it doesn't make any sense to me at all. At all. To support Donald Trump on any level. But half the country disagrees with me.
there you go.
At least 42%.
Figure that one out.
And this is for another conversation, but I do have some understanding.
Yeah, I didn't really want to get too far in the politics, because I try to avoid that on the show here. But, the reason I listed all of those bands, and none of those bands, some became famous, like the Dropkicks, but a lot of them are just Boston bands, popular in Boston. They weren't popular anywhere else.
Boston,
I mean, I'm
Boston
not sure
chaos.
The outlets are still even popular anywhere else. And to two out of three of us sitting here. I don't know about you, Tom, but to me and Jesse,
it's still a pretty underground thing.
I can speak
thing,
for Jesse, and I can tell you right now, we think the Outlets are probably the greatest band ever to come out of Boston.
One of the best, right?
One of them, yeah, absolutely.
You know? And so, but you know, but all those other bands, they never would have got to play in front of that many people if it wasn't. Hey, maybe it was Joe Gittleman or Nat or one of the other guys, but Dickie was still the singer of the band. He had to have something to do with it. So you can't disregard that. And that's what I've been telling people. Listen, I'm not an anti-vaxxer, and I'm not going to support the Define and what they say, but I'm not going to disregard everything that he ever did.
I guess we all have to deal with any outcome of our choices. And he felt, I'm free to make this choice. It's not like he was going to check with the rest of the Bostones first and then do it. He just, I'm anti-vax, and that's it. I'm standing by it.
Well,
I don't agree with it, but the band, now you have a whole bunch of people out of a job.
You know something funny?
The band must have been upset about that. Didn't they have a tour and a new album or something?
And crew people too, other people that are involved. You know, suddenly there's nothing. Thanks a lot. You know?
How that happened, I was at a job recently at 500 Copley in my day job, and I had to deal with the project manager at the property development company that I was doing some work for, and it was Ben Carr.
Oh, yeah, Ben the dancer, right?
Yeah.
Ben the dancer. Oh, yeah, you posted a photo on Facebook of you and Ben. I saw that.
I'm looking, and it says Benjamin Carr with a Rhode Island number. I call up. I go, hey, Ben, this is Jesse from, this is when I worked at Metro Sign and Awning. Are you Ben Carr from the Bostones? And he goes, yeah. And I'm like, this is Jesse from Diablo God. And he was like, holy shit. But I think this was mostly a conversation between Joe and, according to Ben, between Joe and Dickie that went back. Mm. And the rest of the band wasn't really very aware of. Joe's new band, the Kilowatts, it's really good. Avoid One Thing
is one amazing. Of the great Boston bands.
And Dickie's going to Dickie. Also, Dickie's a middle-aged masshole from Dedham. What do you expect?
Maybe he doesn't want to do music anymore. Who knows?
Well, he died. I mean,
he's not only did he get on that tour, but he's doing Riot Fest in Chicago. And I'm wondering, is he going to wear that Kennedy 24 jacket when he
God,
does
I
Riot
hope so.
Fest?
I hope so. I mean,
it would have been Kennedy 1980 would have been kind of okay.
You're right. That's a good point. When you start something like that, do you build on it and keep going with it?
Well,
yeah,
I mean,
a lot of
people besides me must have saw that and posted that photo.
By the way, I'm not the only one. While we're on the topic of the Kennedys, there's a new Diablo Gatto EP coming in November on Rumbar, and there's a song on it called July 69, which is about Chappaquiddick.
Wow.
Yeah.
I like how you snuck that plug in there for Diablo Gatto.
It's about Chappaquiddick and alcoholism.
Did you hear that, Lou? Lou, I know you listen. You must have heard that plug.
Oi, Lou. Oi, oi.
So besides all this craziness with Dickie Barrett, how else do you think punk rock has really changed since, I mean, look, there's always been an argument, like, when did it really start? Was it the Sonics? Was it the Stooges? Was it the MC5? Was it the Pistols? Was it Dead Boys?
It was Little Richard.
See, we're going back further than all of that. It's true.
A 6'4" African-American queen in eyeliner and a turban playing light speed devil's music in the deep south in the 50s.
Pretty punk.
It's one thing to give the finger to the world like Dickie did. It's another to give the finger to the fucking Klan. Oh, pardon me. To the Klan. Little Richard took his life
in
his hands. He's the only rock star I ever met where I was completely awestruck.
Well, okay,
it starts with him.
I agree with that. You know, I mean, some people would say Elvis Presley was kind of punk rock, you know? I mean, some people would say that, you know, The Who. Look at The Who, what they were doing. They were way ahead of the game. But let's talk about what we can traditionally call punk rock. Would you say that it was the late 70s that really was when punk rock took off, the whole English... You know, I'm talking about the Pistols, the Damned,
and CBGB.
Well, it was the Ramones.
Oh, actually, it was right before that, Ramones, New York. See, that's the thing. Was it New York? Was it England?
A lot of people will argue that it was technically New York, because Malcolm McLaren came to see a few bands, didn't he, before he started the Pistols back in London.
Yeah, and that
New York Dolls among them, I think.
And that Ramones tour where the Bromley contingent was there, you know, the Ramones played and Susie was there and Lydon was there and Sid was there and everybody went and started bands. But was it really the Ramones or was it the Dolls? Was it Richard Hell?
It could have been the Dictators. I'm not sure.
What about the MC5? I mean, what I mean?
What about the Stooges?
You know, let me bring up something,
Stooges were the most outrageous thing.
I know you guys...
Since Little Richard, probably.
I know you guys remember this. The Stooges... guitar player Ron Ashton.
Yeah.
He wore the Nazi sign. There's photos of him
on stage. They did?
There's a photo shoot with him in it.
So did Susie. So did Sid.
Yeah.
You know what? Because they were wartime babies and they were trying to piss off their parents. That's what that was about.
That's pretty punk.
Well, that's very punk. Doing the opposite of anything against authority was
isn't
the root
that what Dickie
punk.
Barrett
that's the
just did?
Of punk.
Yes,
that's
it is what he just did. But what's it? That wasn't acceptable.
What they did was acceptable.
Yeah, Nazi stuff is.
I'm not even going to say what's on my mind right now because I'm not willing to take the.
Well, there's a lot of things that happened in punk. Tom and I were talking about "Better Off Dead" by La Peste. Imagine if that song came out right now.
Oh my goodness.
To us, it's one of the greatest Boston songs ever, greatest punk songs. La Peste was an amazing band. I never got to see him. I'm too young. But Better Off Dead, every time I hear him and he's singing about a 14-year-old girl and stuff, I'm thinking, imagine if that came out now.
Well, think if you were a member of La Peste at that time, you got to be saying to yourself, goodbye any commercial success. We don't care. This is what our song says and is.
And
and just take it or leave it.
Nervous Eaters
just had.
Yep. This is stuff that we don't. It's changed so much now. You can't say anything.
No, you can though. You can. I mean,
in front of Gen Z,
you can. But you got to be really careful. More careful than you ever were.
Or it's
got to
be right. You can whap. This also brings us to that rock and roll, gutter rock and roll gave way to hip hop and gave way to rap. I mean, if we want to talk about saying offensive stuff, let's go to Death Row Records.
Yeah. Well, it's another group of quite angry people, angry about whatever they're angry about.
What? It was white suburban kids that bought all the NWA records when they came out.
They ate it up.
I love that record,
I still listen to that stuff.
Yeah, straight out of Compton.
Let's be honest. It was fresh and loud and new and different and angry. Most of all, angry. And that attracts attention.
Public Enemy and NWA, especially for me, they were transforming bands. I mean, they just they changed everything and opened the door for so many other bands to follow in their footsteps.
The anger's still there though. Like when you look at bands like Idols or Bob Villain. You familiar with Bob Dylan?
Yeah, I have his record. Yep.
I mean, that's real shout from the gutter. It's kind of hip hop. It's kind of rock and roll. Idols are definitely pissed off.
Do you remember Crass?
Yes.
How does it feel to be the mother of 1,000 dead?
You're
talking about war and stuff.
There was another band too. I forget. There was.
So look where we are right now.
Amo and the Sniffers. They scream a lot too. They like to scream.
Look where we're sitting. Overrated. Look what we're talking about. What we are right now. I am like against war. I'm against guns. I'm against all this stuff. And you're thinking about
well,
now,
that's really stepping out on a ledge, Steve.
I'm pro-choice. It's like.
Ooh,
You know what I mean, though? If I go and see, why is it okay? Why is it not okay for Kid Rock and Ted Nugent to come out and support Nugent, but it's okay for like
Taylor Swift?
Taylor Swift and Billie Eilish to come out and say they're supporting Harris. Why is that one thing okay and the other thing not okay? I get up so upset? Why am I so upset?
I don't know. But to start with, I mean, Kid Rock makes atrocious music. And Taylor Swift is good.
So if it was Bono that came out and well, you probably don't like him either. That's probably an example. I'm trying to think of someone you really would
Bono's
like.
Bono's okay because Dave Grohl has taken over being the most annoying person in rock and roll.
I love how outspoken Jesse is. I'm the same way, but Jesse's
Dave
further.
Grohl.
No, the point I'm trying to make is it okay? Is this okay? Do we accept this?
I kind of don't think it's okay, and here's why.
Isn't it better if they don't say anything?
But I have a slightly biased, well, not biased, I don't know, sharper perspective on it, because I've been dealing with the pop stars most of my life. I didn't work for everybody. I didn't work for the biggest artists, but I worked for some big ones. I gotta say
Janet Jackson and The Cure are kind of big.
You worked for some kind of successful. Well,
I jumped from tour to tour. It's that simple. Oh, I finished this one. What's next? I don't really care who it is. I'm going. You know why? Because I needed a job. I needed to make money like everybody else. But I didn't want a job back home in an office. I had to be as far away from home as possible. That was my mission for 40 years. And you know what? It worked. Anyway, and here we are. But dealing with famous people, whether they're really famous or not, or they think they're famous, can be really difficult. Don't have to tell you guys, come on, you know, we're all in this industry. But when someone like Billie Eilish, Taylor Swift comes out, or Kid Rock, and says so-and-so, Tom Wilson, me personally, inside of me goes, I don't believe a word you just said because of my work. I say that because I have to second guess the things they say. And sometimes you got to second guess the things that they're asking you to do because they're so freaked out about whatever it is they're asking. They didn't think about what they were asking, and it comes out wrong. And you come back with a stack of towels or whatever it is they asked for, and it's still wrong. So, well, I just don't think that it's an instant, should be an instant, I believe Billy Taylor, I believe Kid Rock.
Should they do it, though, is my
should
question.
No, I think they should keep to themselves and put another record out.
Well, wait a second.
Come on.
Let's talk about Sinead.
It's not going to change the election, I'll tell you that right now.
No, it's not.
Doing that kind of stuff, it's not going to change the election. It might help somebody one way or another, but...
I think
it's a distraction. I'd rather see... My dead grandfather come out and talk about politics and some pop star.
So you're going to write off The Clash?
Write off The Clash?
Yeah. The Clash were a highly political band.
Yes, they were. But did they come out and say, I'm going to vote for Reagan or not?
Oh, okay.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. It's the public thing. I'm a pop star. I believe this. Therefore, you should or should not believe. That's what I don't like. It's like, because I'm a pop star, I'm putting this big thing on the public.
Is it different for movie stars than it is for rock stars, though?
I think it's the same. You're famous, and you're expecting everybody to just go along with what you're saying. I don't think that's real to me. It's just not real.
My opinion is I wish they wouldn't. I wish that no one would come out and say who they
are. I had a girlfriend from New Zealand once. She was a catering girl. We toured together for many years. She ended up on Neil Diamond and some other really bad rap tours. But she, her comment about dealing with the artists was simply that at the end of the day, we all fart in the bathtub. We're human. We're all going to make mistakes, and we're all going to do and say stupid things. Well, the pop stars do it an awful lot.
Mike Newman, who's engineering this show, looks like he's got the mic. He just grabbed it, pulled it against his face. He looks like he wants to say something. Mike, did you want to contribute to this conversation?
I don't know if I really was going to contribute as much as I don't think it's going to change that people are going to endorse. It's just the way this elections work here. I mean, we've always had people, but I like it if they do it within their music and just don't come out and say it.
That's a good point. You know, Jesse brought up a good point.
I don't mind music being used as, you know, a political force. I miss that. So
John Lennon wrote "Give Me Some Truth," but he never came out and promoted any.
He said it through music.
He said it through action. He and Yoko did the bed-ins and all of that stuff.
Did they ever come out and actually support a candidate, though? I'm too young to know.
No, but there's a whole generation of punk rock that we hold in high regard who definitely were anti-Margaret Thatcher and definitely were anti-Ronald Reagan. And people from Jello Biafra to Ian MacKay to Henry Rollins have all...
Nobody liked Reagan in the music business.
But that was... Right. But
those flyers back in the 80s, Reagan was in office. Everyone had Ronald Reagan flyer.
There were
flyer
a lot of Reagan
flyers.
On the other hand, if you had been pro-Reagan in that period, you wouldn't have gotten crucified in social media, but you probably would have been canceled in other ways, even though bands like Screwdriver existed at the same time. Mm. You know, but the neo-Nazi bands were such a cult thing. But they certainly, and I'm, there's some speech maybe we just can't tolerate.
There's not a lot of people that know about Screwdriver, but they were a blatant Nazi band that was quite popular.
Yeah. Well, what that brings us back to the National Front. And the National Front in around... 1977 did a serious recruiting push in England to the punk dudes who were from, because they were like, oh, you're poor, you're overrun with immigrants, or you know.
It's the same thing now, isn't it, what's going on? It's incredible. It's like all about immigrants, man. It's all about the immigrants. Oh, we'll go buy all the records that come out from other countries, but we don't want to move it in our country, you know? A lot of it has to do with that. I know, I'm sure Dickie Barrett doesn't feel that way, hopefully. But, you know, we don't know.
Let's call him up.
Well, you know, one thing I will say about, you know, I didn't want to get political, but I will say one thing about Kennedy. If you look at his platform and the things he's done over the years, you'd be damn surprised to find out that he became what he became, because he was a pro-environmentalist. He was a lawyer that defended all of these. He did everything for the land and the environment. I'm a big environmental guy, you know. His whole platform is very liberal, and then all of a sudden he comes out with this anti-vaxxer thing, and the whole thing flipped over. What I don't get is why would he, you know, give his endorsement to Trump? That's really and what does Dickie and those people feel about that?
Oh, I have something that, like, in my immediate and extended family, a politics thing that I'll never quite understand is how there's Republican, there's Trump folks in my extended family.
I
love them dearly. I love them dearly. And these people, they I know truly that they're great people. But for some reason, man, they are just blinders are on. They will not vote for anybody else. And when I really peck at them a little bit about it, all they're really coming up with is things like, well, I'm not a Republican, I'm a conservative. whatever. And then I get the one that's, granddaddy and grandma and great-grandpapa, granddaddy, they're all this and that Republicans, and we're just following suit. Well, I can't argue with that one too much, because that's kind of what happens in my family. For the lefties, you know? So, I don't know.
A lot of it's selfish, too.
They're just
too,
doing
I
it
think.
Because they feel they have to, because it's their, like, a necessity, not because it's from their own, you know, heart.
I think a lot of it's selfish, too. People just think about how everything's going to affect them and their house and their yard and their town. They don't look at the big picture. They don't really care that these people that are coming in this country escaping horrible situations in El Salvador or Guatemala, wherever they're coming from, Mexico. You know, I don't have a problem with immigrants at all. My mother was born in Italy.
I think if you're desperate enough to cast a vote for somebody like Donald Trump, the human being, Then you've really got problems with other human beings in general.
Humans?
That you're afraid of, like, white slavery in 20 years or something stupid is going to happen. These people are clueless. I'm sorry. They're out there.
We are all the most selfish, savage, barbaric animals on the planet by light years, other than any other animal.
When you say we, do you mean this country?
Humans.
Humans
Not
in general?
Not this country. Humans, historically.
An ancient race.
I think really what we're bumping up against here is a conversation about art, where it comes from as far as social, personal experience, economic experience, and where the statement is. Where's the line? Is there a line in art on expressing viewpoints, either directly or indirectly, about that. And I don't think there is a line, because it's art, it's communication, it's experience. I don't think there are any rules.
Getting back to the whole thing, and then we're going to wrap this segment up. You think it's fine that these people are coming out and talking about what they're promoting and putting it on their sleeve, like Dickie did?
Yep.
Yeah. And what about you, Tom? Do you think it's okay too?
I think I'm not happy with the way they do it, so I'm being fussy. And by that, I mean, if you're someone like Billy or Taylor, man, your life changed overnight somehow. You made it in the music business. You've got millions. Maybe you got a little more to say than simply, I support Kamala or I support Donald Trump. Enhance a little bit. I think some of them did in tweets, but if I was super wealthy and put my face and kind of my career out there to say this thing, I'd want to maybe have a little more to back it up, a little more detail. Says, this is how I really feel about these issues. And maybe they have already and I missed it.
Why are you expecting them to be different than the rest of us? All of us have a broadcast.
I'm not expecting them to be different. I'm expecting them to be human.
Okay, well, if they're being human...
Just put it out there. Say what you want to say. Saying is one thing. I support so-and-so. Hello? Any more? Got any more? Enhance?
All right, okay.
That's all right. Elaboration.
That different than Joey Lunchbox or
was
Karen
he in the
from
Humans? Joey Lunchbox? Was he in the Angry Samoans?
Or Karen from Human Resources posting a political meme on social media to the universe about their effing opinion. This is what it is now. And this is the problem. There's no nuance.
Well, how many people are going to see Taylor Swift's post, and how many are going to see the HR lady's post? I don't know. Who knows? But when you're Taylor Swift, it's probably going to be a lot of people see.
She's got a lot of followers.
So
But we have this electronic village green now with social media. Warhol was right. Everybody does get 15 minutes or 15 seconds. Mm-hmm. So we can all broadcast our stupid opinion, and we all do it all the time. This is why I don't get into political stuff.
And you know what? This got way more political than I intended.
Yeah, let's get back to
it's
the punk
my
rock.
Own fault, and well, I apologize to you people
season,
listening.
Let's be honest. Come on. It's a big election. So.
I don't want to lose any of my conservative listeners, so I apologize to you conservative listeners. I've had guests on my show, by the way, and I'm not going to mention their names. Two of them were in a famous Boston hardcore band. They're well-known conservative guys, okay? And they both probably voted for Trump. So it's not like I've said you can't come on my show, okay? And you know what? I'd have Dickie Barrett on my show in a minute, not just for the ratings, but because I'd love to talk to him and hear what's going on in his head. I would. Jesse.
Yeah.
You got another band now you're in?
I do.
So what's the deal? Tell us about it.
It's called Speed Teeth.
Speed Teeth.
Yes.
Is that from a dentist experience or something? The title?
Somebody once said they liked Lemmy better when he had speed teeth.
That's a good one. I like that.
Did you come up with the name for the band?
No, I didn't. Our friend Rich, who played bass with us for a minute, came up with it.
You got the name from him, and you already booed him out of the band.
Also...
Just kidding, Rich.
The band is Ian Clark, whose mom is Audrey Clark.
I know Ian and Audrey very well.
Yep. And his aunt is Julie Kramer. Ian has the most incredible pedigree in probably all of Boston rock and roll. And Andy Excuse, who played bass in Hammered Saint.
Andy.
Ian can play many musical instruments.
Yeah,
as well.
Andy. I'm working with two insanely talented dudes.
I'd say.
Yeah, it's really fun.
Yeah, good.
And Speed Teeth also kind of fit because it's no secret what Ian's history was and what my history was. So we have fought a lot of damage.
It's
on
no
that.
Secret.
It's no secret. So we've both dealt with.
Actually, I did loads more than you did.
Yeah. When Tom and I was driving here, I asked him. I said, "So do you know Jesse well?" And then he told me the story about how you guys were hammered one night somewhere.
Will you be my drum?
Tech.
No, he was more. He pointed his finger at me and loudly said, "You're setting up my drums from now on." Okay.
Oh my God! You know, to quote David Minahan,
we love. Quote
it's
David
so
Minahan.
Hard to grow up when with so much to live down.
Oh, that's a good one.
I love that quote, man. Love that. Love the hoods.
That's that song.
That's a good Minahan quote.
You know, in the 80s, I think. We all thought we were supposed to be dicks and act a certain
way. Part of the rock and roll deal, you know?
And I wish, did I really talk to you that way? Because that's horrible. I'm sorry, Tom.
Tom was probably so wasted. He doesn't
no
really
hard
remember.
Feelings, because it frightens me to think of the things that I shouted at people back then that I simply can't remember.
I don't think any one of us can ever say that we looked at things straight all the time.
No
back
way.
Then. I know. I
things
can't,
were so different then. There was electricity in the air, and I know it's a cheesy way of saying
it was amazing.
There was a buzz going on. I've never seen anything like it.
You know, I moved to LA. You get off the plane, and there's someone waiting with a mirror and lines for you at LAX. You know, I was like, welcome to LA. You're in the music business.
Joe Piscopo had that, I think, too.
Hey, I think I'll sign these guys Poison.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you're in it. Diablo Gatto is still a thing, though, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We have a new record coming out in November. It is called Snake Oil Salvation. It's on Rumbar. It's a 6-song EP. It's at mastering right now. And it's a dark record.
I saw you guys not too long ago, and you guys were great.
Thanks.
Talk about a great... Seeing you guys and the Dogmatics on the same bill, that was beautiful.
Oh,
man.
That was...
Mike was here, too. Mike Newman was here, too.
That was the show when all the cops in the flak jackets and the detectives came rolling through the club in front of the stage just... before we went on, and I'm thinking, who's got a gun in here? That was some mad stuff.
You guys were great that day, though, man. That was an excellent show.
Thanks.
Absolutely. Tom, you're like off the road with Alanis Morissette and Joan Jett. You want to give us a synopsis of what that tour was like when you were on the road with
which
them?
Which one? Which tour?
Alanis. You just got off the road.
I was on it. Briefly, and then I came home. I didn't do the whole thing. But to sum it up, it was the first time in 40 years that I, you know, jumped on a tour where there wasn't anyone else there that I knew on the crew. Because we travel in packs.
You were the stage manager.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That stinks.
But I was brought in because, well, they needed someone.
They were all young?
Well, it was last minute. It was a last minute thing because I only got a call a week before the thing started, where normally you hear about it like a couple months before, and you plan around that. So I don't know if I was replacing.
What were the audiences like for that tour?
She did really, really well.
Yeah?
Alanis?
How about Joan? Did Joan get received well
from
her?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
How was Depeche Mode to work for?
As people?
Yeah.
The actual band members?
Yeah.
Fantastic guys.
Did you know that...
Well, I don't know if they probably still do it now. The first tour I did with Depeche, I did two of them. The four of them had a separate dressing room. And there were many reasons for that. You could use your imagination.
If Diablo Gatto could afford it, so would we.
There you go.
Go on, tell us more.
Oh. Hey, when Poison goes on tour now, they have four different tour buses. They each have their own tour bus. So that's not really that unusual.
I can't believe they can afford that.
The working for Depeche Mode was different from The Cure, and I'm using The Cure as a reference because I finished a long Cure tour, had 3 weeks off, and walked right into a Depeche one that went on for a year and a half. A little challenging for me. Usually you get a little bit of time around Christmas, and it didn't happen. Anyway, so this Depeche thing went for a year and a half, and right from the beginning, it's a large crew, we were taking bets on who would do the entire 18 months of the tour. Can you make it through 18 months? And we started out with 72 people, and out of that, I think 24, after all the debauchery and craziness, actually did every single show.
Did you make it?
I made it through.
Wow.
My ex-wife and I, we did the whole thing. So that tour goes down in history as a, I think it was either Melody Maker or NME referred to it as the most debauched tour in rock history.
Whoa. Was David Gahan still using them?
Oh, yeah. 1993 and 94. I have to agree with the Melody Maker statement, but what about Aerosmith and the Stones in the 70s? What are you guys talking about in history? I mean, even the Beatles probably had a wilder time than we did.
There was one time during with Deep Purple when Tommy Bolin and Glenn Hughes and covered it. Well, maybe not covered it as much as those other two guys, but I read Glenn Hughes' book. It's horrifying.
Yeah, there's a lot of wild stuff goes on the road, as we all know. Depeche, what was unique to me, because I've done some wild stuff previous, but the thing on Depeche was, it was like the No Sleep Tour, and it wasn't just the drugs. I'm talking about the clubs and the ladies and the women, the dance clubs, big techno clubs. That was their thing. I mean, their music was, yeah, electronic based. And I didn't get that they were like ravey type people, but that's what they liked to do. So what happened is I would pack up my drums or whatever, which took about an hour, and some band member or tour manager would come by on certain nights where I was supposed to travel with the crew, like a good boy, and go to the next place. They'd be like, "You're coming out with us." I'm like, "Where? What? You're coming out?" And the band would simply take turns, each one of us, one at a time, and take you with them. And just
didn't you tell me a story about San Francisco just, on your birthday or something with the Depeche Mode?
Boston on my birthday. Downtown Boston. They put me up at the Four Seasons because the singer and I, David, have the same birthday. And I couldn't figure out where to take them because the idea was, they were like, "Tom, you were going to take us out in Boston. It's your town. Even though it's your birthday, you got to figure out where to go." We ended up at the Roxy of all places, only because that particular night in the tour schedule, there's nothing going on. It was like a Tuesday or a Wednesday. So I had to get creative. So the Roxy, I think it was like a gay and mixed night, which was interesting. But I took them out, and I think I took them to the Middle East. We went into the side bar, the bakery of the Middle East. I got all four of them in there, and they looked around, and they're like, "Nope." And they walked right. They hated the Middle East. And I think, "Oh, we tried Bill's Bar," and they're like, "Eh, we last a little longer in Bill's Bar." "No, I don't like Bill's Bar." Out they go. Pretty fussy people.
Wow.
But no, we had a lot of fun.
So you're not tempted really to try well. To get on with the Oasis tour?
What's that? Actually, there's only one job I would take on that tour. Fight Breaker Upper Guy.
You're big enough to break up first two guys.
Upper Guy. Yeah, well, you just missed it with Jane's Addiction.
I know. No, I've hung out with the Oasis band and crew because we have mutual friends. But I never actually worked for them. But holy moly, can they go? That's why I'll tell you forever that the most debauched tour comment about my tour that I was on can't be accurate. It just can't be accurate.
All right, guys, you know, one of my things is lists, as you know, and I always have to, you know, ask people. Jesse's like, "Okay, I'm prepared for this."
I'm not.
Okay,
I'm not.
I didn't know which one of these lists I was going to do, so I'll ask you guys first. Do you want to do top five Boston bands, top five favorite punk bands of all time, or top five favorite punk songs of all time? Which one of those? I have more than five on every one of my lists, I can tell you right now. Which one you want to do first? Let's do Boston bands.
Top five
Boston bands. Tom, you really want to go first, I can tell.
Well, unless you want to go first. Jess?
Oh. Yeah, we're good.
Real quick. Outlets, Mung, Hoods, Early Hoods. Come.
Oh, that's
Come.
Good. Yep.
Talia. Jesus.
Yeah, there was something.
Did you see that Chris Brokaw's touring now, and he's got Clint Connolly playing bass with him in his
Clint's
band?
Playing bass again?
Yeah. Isn't that
have
cool?
you songs? I'm going to put Bricks by Chris Brokaw up there as the gnarliest, realest, best song about heroin I've ever heard.
Bricks.
It's off his solo record. That shit's real.
Tom is like playing engineer over here, messing around with mics and stuff.
He can't help himself.
Jesus.
I'm sorry. I'm a foul-mouthed old bastard.
T- Jesse came up with a whole category that I didn't even mention. He's talking about songs now. Okay. So,
and even though they were kind of Providence, but also Boston, Scarce.
Oh, I love Scarce.
I miss Scarce.
I got to work with them at A&M right before they broke up. Good band.
That's a
Dead Sexy.
That's a crazy story about Chick's aneurysm and all of that. Joyce wrote a book.
Is there a CD?
I was at their last show in Providence that they played. The last show they did on that right during the A&M era. I think they might have
been. I might have been there.
I think they might have reunited again years later, but this was the end, the official first ending.
Makes me think of Rash of Stabbings. They were good.
So, in your top five Boston bands, you said Hoods, Hmong,
Come, Scarce,
Neighborhoods.
I said Hoods.
There you go. That's five. What about you, Tom?
Gangrene.
Five. Bands only?
I got more than five. Thank you. Don't worry.
Gangrene should be on the list. There's so many, though. I've got La Peste here. I've got Real Kids.
Yep.
I've got Dogmatics.
Yep.
I've been listening to more and more lately for some reason.
Going to see them tomorrow.
The FUs, because Young Fast Iranian is one of my favorites.
Oh, I love it.
All right.
And, of course, Robin Lane and the Chartbusters. Yep. I've been a fan since I was a little teenager.
Were you a big Ace of Rebner fan?
Well, I was young.
Yeah.
But I met him. I worked with him a bit later on.
You did?
Yeah, he's a little bit of a grouchy guy, but he's a real sweetheart, too.
You guys mentioned some of the bands on my list. In no order here. Outlets, Neighborhoods, Mission of Burma, Lemonheads, and then I had a tie for number five, Bullet LaVolta and Gangrene.
Oh.
Can't leave Chris Doherty off any of my list.
I know.
Dead Wrong, one of the greatest Boston songs ever recorded.
You know, I'll do songs off the top of my head because you named some songs. We already talked before about Arrogance, which I think we're going to end the show with today, by the Neighborhoods. You can't not have an Outlet song on my list, so I'm going to, I'll just go obvious here and say...
Knock Me Down?
I'm going to go with Bright Lights. I don't know why. They're a metal song. I really like that one. Mission of Burma, that's how I escaped my certain fate. La Peste, we were talking about this before, Better Off Dead.
It's a classic.
Yeah.
Instant classic.
And I also like Young Fast Iranians and Out on the Couch by Gangrene. I always put on every list that I have.
Chris, God bless
you. I'm out on the couch. I'm down for the count. Top five favorite punk bands, period, of all bands.
Top five. Go ahead, Jess.
All time favorite punk band. Jesse's going to say Little Richard.
Yep. Little Richard. Stooges. Ramones.
Can I guess another one of yours?
Yeah.
Social D.
No, absolutely not.
Absolutely not?
Absolutely not. And I love Valvoline Rock. I mean, it speaks to me personally.
I thought you were a big Social D fan. I always thought you loved Mike Ness. You just rolled your eyes at me, my friend.
Dude, the thing, and I'll say this as a band member, you have to understand that pretty quickly you become a cartoon. It's one of the things about Diablogato. We understand that we're a cartoon. The Ramones taught us this. Mike did not understand that he was a cartoon. And the whole, I'm a gangster from 1933. Here's a story about how hard my life is. It's kind of mid-tempo. Let me grab a kid out of the audience and lecture him about how he's got to carry the torch because we fought the cops for his right to do that. That stuff
got... can of worms.
Jeez. See? The thing about Mike, what's really endeared me to him lately... On Instagram, his posting of his recovery from cancer and him trying to find his singing voice again and him as a grandfather there, it's really softened him. And as a cancer survivor myself, I really identify with that. You know, I mean, I'm as big a cliche in a smaller pond that as I understand that I'm also a cliche, the recovered guy with the tattoos and the hot rod that plays in a band with an upright bass. You know, cartoon. But Mike has become more human. And if they're playing at the Hampton Beach Casino with the bell rays, I'm so there.
They are.
And I stopped seeing Social D at the Hampton Beach Casino 25 years ago because Mike started lecturing a kid again about carrying the torch.
I'm telling you, if you get to see the bell rays and you have to leave for some reason, you still succeeded. They're great.
We're running awesome out of time, band. Tom, because we're on live radio, but quick, give me your top five.
Five bands and their songs. Suicidal Tendencies, Institutionalized. Sex, okay. Pistols, Sex Pistols, I Want to Be Me. Coup d'etat by Circle Jerks. Minor Threat, In Your Eyes. Buzzcocks, Is Everybody... What?
Everybody's Happy?
Everybody's Happy Now.
You know what? I was going to do bands, but I'm going to just do songs real quick. Dead Boys, Sonic Reducer, Sex Pistols, Bodies, Black Flag, Rise Above, Television, Marquee Moon, even though people say they're not a punk band, Stiff Little Fingers, Suspect Device, and my sixth is Circle Jerks, Wild in the Streets.
Hey, they were punk meets art almost, kind of, weren't they, Television?
They were punk. Yes, that's the whole
punk
point.
Punk and art, too, though. Kind of art.
Art is punk.
Quirky. It was more quirky than Talking Heads at the time, wasn't it? Or maybe not.
Thank you very much, Tom and Jesse.
Thank you.
I hope you people out there enjoy listening to this podcast. You can reach me anytime at twistedrico@gmail.com. We have Facebook, Threads, Instagram. We have the booking page on Instagram kind of got whaled, but we're working on getting it back, so it's at Twisted Rico Podcast. There's also a YouTube page, but this show's not on YouTube, unfortunately, because these guys are handsome devils. All right, till the next. Thank you, Mike, for engineering. Till the next time we say goodbye, this is Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico. I'm your host, Steve Ricardo. Keep the rock and roll alive. We're going to leave you with a neighborhood song, one of our favorites, Arrogance.
Righteous. God bless the Ratskeller.